English folk and dance. They were Cecil Sharp and Mary Neal. But this weekend, a posthumous reconciliation will take place when Mary Neal's archives will be lodged at Cecil Sharp House in North London, home of the English Folk Dance and Song Society. It's been arranged by Mary Neal's great-great-niece, Lucy Neal. Lucy, what did you find in the archive?
I found her unpublished autobiography and various other newspaper cuttings and leaflets and pamphlets and some photographs.
And what was her involvement in this English folk dance and song movement?
She was working initially as a Sister of Mercy at the West London Mission in London and was charged with setting up a girls' club. This was back in 1988. And that led on to her, with her very close friend Emmeline Pethick Lawrence, to set up something more creative, which was something they called the Esperance Club, Esperance as in hope, because they were both women very concerned with the plight of the sewing girls in that very slum area of London around King's Cross.
And what did they plan would happen at the Esperance Club?
I think they wanted to create a safe space for the girls that was warm, and it met four nights a week, and they had singing lessons and dancing and workers' rights sessions, and so it was really quite emancipated for these young women. And it was they had Christmas parties very regularly, and it was at one particular Christmas party, having done a lot of Irish dancing and Scottish dancing, Mary turned to her musical director, Herbert McElwain, and said, where's English? You know, what's happening on the English front? And he had read an article by Cecil Sharp, who was then becoming known as a collector of folk songs. So the next day, Mary, who tended to do things on impulse like that, went to see Sharp and said, what English songs have you got that my girls could dance? And he gave her a set of songs, and off she went, and they sang them, and they loved them.
Well, let's listen to just a short extract of a song that they might have danced to. So what kind of dance were they doing? I mean, how did she know what sort of steps they were doing?
Well, the songs, in a sense, were the first thing. And then she thought, well, let's have some dancing. So went back to Sharp and said, what about dances? And he said, I'm a music person, I'm a song collector, but I did once hear of some dancing 7 years ago, and gave her the name of a dancer from Headington near Oxford called William Kimber. So again, the next day, Mary goes off to Oxford and asks Kimber and his cousin to come to London and to teach the girls. And again, the girls picked it up very quickly, and they learnt song dances, Morris dancing, bean setting and shepherd's hay, and, you know, dances that would be very well known today by Morris sides. And they just had a lot of fun, and the girls learnt very quickly. And because I think she was something of an entrepreneur, she was a sort of festival girl, she put on public performances. And so the girls became performers as well as teachers, and that she moved in very eclectic circles of politicians, Keir Hardie, the Pankhursts, W.B. Yeats. And at one of these Christmas parties, she recounts that there were 200 people there watching, and number of witnesses, and Cecil Sharp was also one of those, witnessed something shift, as it were, that to watch these city girls who were working class, poor, sewing women dancing tunes and singing songs that came from a longer history of England, it just clicked something. And she saw that this could be done again and again, which is what she then went on to do.
So what did she and Cecil Sharp fall out about?
Well, for 2 years, they worked, in her own words, in perfect harmony. And there was a huge sense of collaboration around the sense that they were on to something, that these girls, in Sharp's word, had picked up on what he called a sort of lost inheritance. And it was hugely successful. People wanted the girls to travel to teach. They became teachers as well as dancers. And for 2 years, there was a sense that they had just hit on something, and that there was interest, it was fun, people were engaging, they were going back to villages, they were bringing traditional dancers into town. And they held a conference at which Punch published a cartoon, which feature the girls dancing with Punch. And Mary describes taking it in to see Cecil Sharp, say, look, 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 we've got this publicity. And she describes a blind coming down over his face. And one can't, you know, one has to kind of imagine why it was at that moment when the thing was becoming quite a, you know, public news. And I think there were a number of factors. I think that he found she was possibly a bit too sort of free and easy with the sort of setting it up and engaging and the participation in it from quite a very wide range of these young girls. And he wanted to be accurate. He wanted to say, this is a traditional dance. It's done like this.
And how much of a tradition was there of women dancing, Maurice?
I think at that point, not a great deal. And in later life, she reflected and thought, crikey, you know, was that what the problem was? But the truth is that the form is structured in a tradition. The space for people to learn it, enjoy it, inhabit it, as it were. And there's no question that the girls, somebody described, the dancing gave wing to the songs. And it's possibly a combination of those two.
Why did she change her mind and wonder if she'd done the right thing giving it to women?
She did this in her 80s, you know. And it was, her view of it was that it was a tiny drama that went to the very foundations of life. And it was something that everybody cared passionately about. Sharp cared passionately about this. So did she. And that I think it was that care and that passion that produced some of the conflict. And it was a big thing, you know. Eventually there's a description of a blizzard of letters between him, because he kept insisting that they were not an authority and that they were not doing it properly. And she kept saying, look, Kimber taught the girls. We're going to traditional dances. They're simply learning. But I think she could embrace diversity and plurality, because every single place you went to in the country, there's a slightly different form. Different dancers did it different ways in different days. Sharp was excellent at capturing a moment in time. And I think later in life, she was sort of rationalising how this had happened. And it was more about energies of women and men and how those energies work, you know, in the sort of wider cosmos, almost, if you like.
What's the state of Morris dancing now? I'm sure I heard recently that people are finding it very difficult
to get people to join groups. I think that there are dancers who worry about how a younger generation will kind of pick up on it. But on the other hand, you know, there are thousands of Morris dancers up and down the country. There are women, there are children, there are families. It's very vibrant. I don't think there's any danger of it ever disappearing.
So what will it mean for this archive to be lodged in Cecil Sharp House?
Well, I think it is quite a big deal. I mean, they are seen as the initial collaborators of the revival, and the controversy, in a sense, has lived on beyond their own personal reconciliations. They both wrote friendly letters to each other. It wasn't actually at the end of the day, there wasn't personal enmity. She moved on and did hundreds of other things. She was a suffragette, she was a journalist, she was a magistrate. Huge passion for social justice and children. Sharp died in 1924, but the Cecil Sharp House was built after his death, and his sort of legacy, in a sense, endured far more than hers, although her spirit, if you like, of experimentation remained because of her placing the idea that culture was something that lived through invention and through participation in it. So Saturday, when a number of folk practitioners and contemporary arts practitioners gather, it'll be a celebration and a reconciliation of their shared achievements.
Now, you're one of the founders of the London International Festival of Theatre. How has this archive influenced you?
Very much. It's given me a real insight into how culture reinvents, how history is written, but mostly that it is at parties and festivals and social gatherings of the kind I hope we'll have on Saturday that things shift and change for people in their imaginations about what it is that they can be a part of.
Has it made you less of an internationalist?
I've just simply seen it. I've sensed my own Englishness, certainly. I've learnt through that. But Saturday is a gathering of a lot of bits of the jigsaw puzzle, and there's also going to be a website, www.maryneal.org, which gathers all those bits of jigsaw puzzle together. So I hope people can take it up and inspire them in the way it has absolutely inspired me.
Lucy Neal, thank you.